And welcome, everyone, to another edition of one of Podcast Quincy's programs and the staple program, which is the Mayor's program, which is called City View with Mayor Tom Koch. With me right now is Mayor Tom Koch. Welcome, Mayor.
Hey, Mark.
And again, we're gaining steam on the podcast.
Awesome. Hey, any way we can get the word out.
You know? And that's what it's about. It's everywhere. It's on iTunes. It's now finally on Google Play. So if you don't have an iPhone and you have a Galaxy or an Android device, you can get the podcast anywhere. So what we'd like to ask you to do is subscribe to it. It's called Podcast Quincy. And within that, you'll find the Mayor's Program, City View. You'll also find other shows as we move forward down the podcast road here. One of them we're working on right now is something that you had commissioned us, Mayor, to do with Bob Damon called the History and Heritage Roadshow. We've already done a couple of episodes of it. We're just working in some audio into that.
Plenty to work with on that subject.
There really is. So it's exciting, and it's exciting to be on this platform. So again, subscribe to us. Let your friends know that we are here, and we hope that you'll tune in weekly or catch an episode at any time from the City of Quincy website, quincyma.gov, or again, find us at your favorite podcast spot. So, Mayor, getting into today, let's talk a little bit about what's on everyone's mind, I think, in Quincy. At some point, if you're driving through the city, you see a lot of construction happening. Without this, we couldn't focus it all in one show, but let's focus a little bit on maybe housing and some of the affordable housing that'll be coming up.
Sure. It's an interesting topic because some of may have read or heard the greater Boston region story in that we need to build tens of thousands of new housing units to meet the demand over the next couple of decades for keeping the young talent here in the Boston area. Obviously, Boston is perhaps arguably the center of the world when it comes to medical and when it comes to education. So both of those bring a lot of young talent to this region, and there's a lot of great companies here that hire these young people. And one of the challenges now keeping them here is meeting the housing demands for that. It's kind of a twofold thing because just if you look at life in general, the American way, you hear the thing called supply and demand, right? So if you put more supply in the marketplace, that will help stabilize the pricing because with less units in the marketplace, the landlords can drive the rents up much higher because people don't have a lot of choices and there's not enough units in the marketplace. So that's one. So the more units we put in the marketplace, and I'm not talking about just in Quincy. We meet with other mayors around Boston, Metro Mayors, MAPC Group. We talk about these things. You can go up around the Boston area. Boston, Malden, all these different cities are building all kinds of new housing units. Chelsea, you go by, you're just going through the expressway, and you look off to the right and see all the new housing units in Chelsea. There's a reason for that, and that is the demand is there. And we in Quincy have four red line stations, which is tremendous for the convenience of people living here on getting to where they need to be. A lot of people obviously working in Boston. So getting more housing units in the mix is needed and necessary to sustain our economy in Massachusetts, for one. Two is that economy really in Massachusetts is bedded in the Boston region. I mean, the ring of value is around Boston, and that's with all due respect to every other city in town, but we're part of that ring of value. So that's where it's happening, and we've got to respond to that. Number two is a lot of people have been very concerned individually about getting into the marketplace, whether an apartment or buying a condo or a home, that there's not enough affordable housing. Now, I just want to reiterate that the best thing we can do in general for all of our communities is to get more units online to stabilize rents, right? Stabilize the issues so they don't keep going crazy. Then there's that other piece, which even in a marketplace that may not be as robust would still have trouble breaking in. A good friend of mine, Leo Martin, he's a landlord. He's certainly a successful business guy. And he had a proposal before the planning board a couple of weeks ago to put an additional two stories on one of his buildings on Temple Street. And those additional stories would supplement or add to what he's already doing, which is veterans housing. It's through an organization that runs this housing for those veterans who just, for whatever reason, when they came home, they had a lot of challenges, a lot of issues. So they provided units and they have the services they need. And that's awesome. And I remember talking to Leo and him saying, Mary says, where do the waitresses live? Where do the cab drivers live? Where do the people that just go out and just live paycheck to paycheck that work very hard? And I'm not in any way trying to demean anybody that's doing any of that kind of work. But his point was, how do we look out for the working people out there that get it done every day, don't have a lot of means, but just get out and work very hard? So that kind of struck a chord with me. So obviously the father of three adult children, I'm also concerned about my kids breaking into the market at some point, either rental or ownership someday, hopefully. So what can we do and what has been going on the affordable side? And the affordable side, some people automatically think Section 8, you know. Affordable, we use a term called workforce, and that's exactly, you know, the point of the workforce housing is to speak to the working people, the people that are out there every day that need a place to live that can't afford some of this market rent that's out there. So we're doing two tracks. One is we're trying to add units. We have been adding units. We've seen that citywide. They are market rate, but hopefully with the addition of units, it helps to stabilize that rent. Then number two is, okay, what are we doing in our city to help the working folks, the working families working hard every day that can't afford these rents? And a little history, the city a number of years ago, and I know Joe Finn, who's on the council for years, was one of the big pushers to have inclusionary zoning, which is when a developer comes in, and by the way, they pay all kinds of fees when they do come in. This was an additional fee put on, which is depending on the number of units that the developer has to contribute either units or cash value to the Affordable Housing Trust for the purpose of affordable housing. So that's been going on for a number of years, and we've had some great successes. In some cases, some of the nonprofits have come to our Affordable Housing Trust, requested some funding to help with certain projects. I know Neighborhood Housing Services has done it. Quincy Community Action has done it. And we've built veterans housing. We've built housing for working folks. So there's that. Then there's you know, the question about the first-time home buyer. We funded some programs there over the years because, you know, young people that try to break into the market, one of the challenges is trying to get the amount of money needed for deposit, you know, down payment. So there's no right or wrong here on how we spend the money. It's how do we best use the money and make a difference in people's lives. So Affordable Housing Trust Fund meets on a regular basis. They're volunteers. The planning director, Jim Fatsy, chairs it. Tom Fabrizio is the administrator for it. He handles all the housing stuff out of this office. And they work very hard with those folks. So we're looking at a couple different options going forward in the quest for creating more housing is going into some of the areas of our city that perhaps are the values are a little more depressed. Perhaps the housing stock is a little more tired on some streets. And maybe what we could do is buy some of the current tired stock, put some of those properties together and come out with a new product, a new housing unit that units that would be an increase in value to the neighborhood because it'll be a lot nicer piece of property and obviously mainly to provide that opportunity for workforce housing. So there's a number of options we're looking at, a number of ideas we're looking at. A lot of people hear about the 10% rule. You know, the state has a rule, and they look at 10%. The goal is for every community to have 10% affordable housing. We hover that 10%, depending on the project. We go up or over a little bit. We drop down a little. There's now a number of factors that go into making that formula and what equates to having 10%. Although one of the issues I do have with the state on that is they do not recognize Section 8s as part of that number. A Section 8 certificate, and I believe we have some between some 1,500 and 1,800 holders of Section 8s in Quincy, if that number were counted, would be over 13% affordable housing. Mm. So I think some of those formulas that they use are really faulty, to say the least. But having said that, we know there's a challenge right now. We know it's probably as hard or hottest as I recall. I remember with a couple of my older siblings when they were looking to buy houses in the late 70s. You know, the prices weren't bad, but the interest rates were out of whack. They were paying 14, 15% interest rates on mortgages.
That's amazing.
That's how crazy it was. Yeah. Now, the flip has happened. Now, the mortgage rates are reasonable. They're creeping up again, but not anywhere near that number. But the values on properties have just gone crazy. Now, that's a result of what's happening in the marketplace.
Right.
And we're seeing it not only in Quincy, but in the greater Boston area. But certainly in Quincy, we've gone to some real big numbers value-wise, both in rental as well as property, single-family, two-family, four families. They're selling for big money. Now, that's a great thing if you're looking to sell your house and go to retirement to Florida or something, but it's a tough thing when you're trying to buy a home or get into the marketplace. So not a lot of quick, simple answers to that. But we got to keep working the inclusionary zoning process. We got to continue to create these opportunities for young people. The Fox Rock proposal, I know we're going to talk a little more about that next week when we go to the city council, but one of those buildings they're going to build is for workforce housing right in the downtown. So there is some light on the horizon here, I think, to help with some of this issue, but it's a tough one. It really is, because you only can do so much in government. It is a free marketplace, and the market drives the economy. And so we got to continue to work hard at it. I appreciate the work of all those who have been involved. The council has been terrific, and they speak quite a bit about this challenge as well. I guess in some ways it's a good problem to have. You know, you could go to Haverhill and see your values dropping. You know, and I don't mean to pick on them, but there's so much going on in the city. It's a city that people want to live in. It's a safe city. We have excellent services, outstanding schools. We have 4 Red Line stations. We have the ocean. We have the Blue Hills. So, you know, for all those reasons, I mean, people want to be here. So it makes it more difficult with making the numbers work for people. So we'll keep working the issue.
And it is a very complicated issue. It's refreshing to hear all this. I mean, that's just some of the things that we're doing to help it out. But there's only so much that the government can do, as a local government can do, in a free market society where people are always talking about so many places are going up. Well, we don't have a lot of say over a lot of these things too, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, the reality is people have a right to do something with their property. Somebody owns a piece of property and it meets the zoning, you know, they have to follow the zoning, but they have a right to build on it. Now, you know, there's times over the years we've changed the zoning. Who thought a number of years ago when we made the changes that we would be, you know, building on some of these marginal properties that nobody thought would ever happen? I mean, I'm a lifelong resident of the city, and you go up to Roach Brothers and Walmart area, and there was a junkyard up there and, you know, all kinds of rock that had to blast. You know, nobody thought anything would ever be built there because they had to clean the whole site, clean the soil, all kinds of blasting for the stone, rock up there and the quarries up there. But when, you know, the old saying, I think it was Earl Rogers, buy land, they ain't making any more of it. When you get to that point when you're running out of land in the urban areas, those pieces of land become far more valuable. So we've seen a tremendous transition in the city from heavy manufacturing over the years into the banking and financial and more of a white-collar workforce. But along the way, we've seen incredible development for residential properties. Mm-hmm. And they're filling them. I mean, it's not like these things are being built and left empty.
No.
They fill them. They're filled right up. So that's certainly, I guess, going back to the point, it's kind of flattering in the sense that people want to live here for all the right reasons. So that's a great thing. So we're doing something right.
Very interesting. Thank you for that in update and response. And, you know, we could talk about each one of these issues for a half hour, but we said that we would break it up into 2 or 3 different topics for each podcast.
Wake up out there. They put them to sleep. Yeah.
No, this is very interesting stuff. So we're here at the end of February while we're recording this, and we're almost into March. The winter is not over, but we've had a great winter so far.
It has been a decent winter, absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about this.
Not over till it's over. What's the old saying?
I remember the April 1st storm back in 2000 or 1996, I think it was, 97.
I remember it well.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, winters. We've had some brutal winters over the past 5 years. Sure. I mean, some brutal winters, the worst ever. And you know, last year with the ice and the snow and what happened on House Neck and some houses that were destroyed. Let's talk a little bit about where we are in that process, what it's about. The roads. And I just wanted to touch base on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not out of the woods yet, but the sun is higher, the days are longer, you know, so we're getting close to spring. You still have major storms, but they don't last as long. You know, when you get into the winter, when you have the early storms in December and it's cold and, you know, you're stuck with that snow and ice for a long time ahead of you, but at this end, you know, it's the opposite end. Now, over the years, budget-wise, we have been paying more attention to the real costs. For many, many years, and this isn't unique to Quincy, city and towns have done it all over the places. 2 reasons why where you can overspend. It's one is snow and ice, and the other is if there's a legal judgment against the city. You can overspend, and you can add it to next year's tax rate. So, you know, people conveniently kept the budget low because they knew they could go there. It's that insurance policy, if you will. But I, you know, early on, I recognized that as a structural deficit. It was a snow budget when I took office was like $300,000. It was that way for like 20, 25 years. We overspent every year. So that's a structural deficit. So
2015 was the
one. That was insane.
Catastrophic.
That was insane. Right? Yeah, that was that $13 million a year. It was crazy. And we've paid that off completely. But so we've made an attempt. Every year we've gone up on that budget line item. You know, we're well over $2 million now. And I'll continue to creep that up until we reach that, you know, whether it's a 5-year or 10-year average of a winter cost. Now, this people forget quickly, too, by the way. You know, you have snow events that melt. You have another snow event. We've had a number of ice storms that get costly because you use a lot of road salt. And when it gets real cold, you have to use another there's another salt called magic salt, which is very expensive, but it works when the temperature has gone on a certain level. So some people have noticed and some people have commented on the brining process that we do, which is pre-treating. The old days on pre-treating streets when a storm was predicted, you'd send your sanders and salters out, and you'd hit the roads with road salt. Well, as you watch those trucks go down the street, the salt migrates to the curb line because the roads have a bevel in them anyway. They're high at the center for drainage purposes. And then, you know, cars go over it. So by the time the snow fell, there was no rock salt left where the traffic pattern was. It all ended up in the curb line. So it was really a waste of money. So a number of years ago, actually, my brother Joe was working at the city at the time. He had done some research, and he was pushing this idea of brining, we had never heard of it, and we all got together on it, and it makes perfect sense. We've been doing that ever since. So you use far less money and far less salt because you take some salt and mix it with water and create this brine substance that then is applied to the roadways. And what does that do? Well, when the storm first hits, particularly if you get a storm hitting around rush hour and you can't get the salters around the city, this helps create a little bit of a heat on the road that allows cars to continue to have traction. It prevents essentially this ice over from happening by having that adhering to the asphalt. So it's a much more economical way to pre-treat, it's been very successful. We're very happy with it. And the road salt, itself, particularly when it ends up in the gutter line on the storm drains, it eats everything away. All of the, if you'll notice, around manhole covers and around storm drains, it gets all decayed and problematic. That's in large due part to some of the salt that is eaten away at all this stuff. So, you know, it eats the trees when you're throwing it out there. It's not good for the plant life and so forth. So once the storm is happening and we're applying salt during the storm, that's road salt goes where it's supposed to go because you've got the snow and ice on the road. So it doesn't fly and bounce everywhere like it does in a pre-treat. So it's great for the environment, what we're doing with it. So now we're getting into that time of year where we got all the potholes to deal with. You get the freezing and thawing and freezing and thawing. And that's going on. I always encourage people to call Public Works. I know the numbers are on the website. When you have any issues relating to roadways.
And visit quincyma.gov, by the way. That's where you can find
all
that information.
We have the gas company on a number of streets putting new gas mains in. This summer, spring and summer, we're going to be doing miles and miles of new water mains, and we're going to be doing a lot of road work around the city. We probably could spend a show just on that and talk about the different areas, but we're going to be touching like 100 streets this year, either gas, water, or repaving, or all three.
And one of the things you said before in the past, when you're going to fix a road, or forgive my lack of knowledge of the language of road repair, but in the past, a lot of times they would just cover it with tar, fresh tar, or whatever you call that now.
Yeah, that was a standard years ago. You could bang out a lot more streets just putting, we used to call it painting it black, you know, putting essentially an inch coat over everything. When you do that after a couple of years, you lose your curb reveal, so your drainage now isn't doing what it's supposed to do. It's jumping the curb and going into people's properties. But it doesn't fix the underlying problems. If you've got some real structural issues with the street, cracking, and there's something going on with the sub-base, well, you got to dig it up and fix it. Now there's another process called micro-paving, which we've used where the road isn't too bad. We go out and do prep work, and then we go over it with a smaller coat not bigger than what they used to do. It's not called painting, but you can buy a number of years. But there are streets that are so far gone that that's just a waste of money. So some roads you can go in and cold plan. You see a grinder go down and then repave. Some streets you got to dig it all out and redo the subgrade, fix the drainage all at the same time so they've been drained properly, and then do the roadway. We also have to try to attempt to, well, not attempt, we actually do. We try to do all of the curb cuts at the different intersections for ADA requirements for the ramp. It's, you know, for not only somebody with a wheelchair, but somebody on a bike, somebody with a stroller, instead of jumping the curb, you know, we put all these ramps in all over the place. So there's more to it than meets the eye. Al Grazioso and his team are doing a great job. We'll see a lot of activity this year. And I thank the council for the support. We went to them with a big plan last year, and we're well underway, so we appreciate them.
And not to mention the water pipes that were there, have been there since 1900, 1897 and 1930, right? I mean, a lot of those replaced. I mean,
yeah, that's part of it. People lose water pressure, and water breaks over time, you know, when the ground starts to move because of fear of the pipes. But yeah, I mean, we still have some old wooden water lines out there.
You're kidding.
And then in the 1920s, a lot of water lines were done, but the steel was not a good steel. They found out later. So we actually have pipes that were 1890 that might be in better shape than a 1925 pipe. So it varies at different locations. But yeah, that's an important piece. I mean, people turn the faucet on. They don't think about how it gets there, you know. But, you know, water main replacement is very important. We do that on a regular basis. We do them so many miles a year, making sure the hydrants are working, obviously for public safety. No, that's part of the infrastructure that Public Works oversees, and they do a nice job.
And more of the services here at the City of Presidents Quincy, Massachusetts. Thank you, Mayor, for that update on the roads. And just speaking of the roads, we had Lieutenant Governor Karen Pulido in yesterday talking about her new plan, which is called with the
Complete Streets Program. Yeah, it's something that the Governor and Lieutenant Governor come up with MassDOT, which is it's a grant program, so you got to apply for it. It's competitive. And what it does is it encourages communities to focus in on safety of bikers, of pedestrians, making changes at intersections, ramps, new painting and signage and lighting. So Chris Cassani from our Traffic and Parking and Lighting Department applied. We received a grant of about $306,000 that's going to go to some good intersections and get some good work done on the complete streets. So I, again, thank the governor, lieutenant governor. They've been a great partner for Quincy. And, of course, the programs are funded through the support of our state legislators. I mean, Senator Keenan, you know, Majority Leader Mariano, and Representative Ayers, Representative Chan, Representative Dan Hunt, all of them have been supportive. So that's a nice program that augments the money we get each year under Chapter 90, which is from the state for roads. And, of course, MassWorks grants we've received over the years as well from the governor and Gateway City grants. So we're always leveraging the taxpayers' residential tax dollar with state monies, with federal monies, grants, any MRACs where we can. So we're an old city, Mark. I know we've talked about this before. We're an old city. We're a great city. We're an old city with great history, but with the age of the city comes challenges, infrastructure, and we got to continue to work on it. We've been doing that with school buildings, firehouses, pipes, sewer lines, drain lines, seawalls. I mean, there's 83 tide gates that we have in the city we maintain. So there's a lot of infrastructure, and you know, people don't think about it until it hits the fan. You know, whether it's the sewer line backing up, whether the water doesn't work, and there's a water break somewhere. Or the seawall is compromised, and we saw last March what happened in Adams Shore and Howes Neck and Germantown. So we got to maintain this stuff, and we got to keep up with it as best we can. We don't have the money to do it all. We would like to be, but we keep chipping away at it, and that's what we need to do for not just for purposes of today, but for the next generation.
And, Mayor, I think that's a good place to wrap up this edition, or the fourth episode, if you will, of City View with Mayor Tom Koch. One of our Quincy podcast, Quincy programs, our first and the only program that's on that channel right now, and we'll have more as we move forward, get closer to the spring and summer. Mayor, I want to thank you very much for allowing us to sit here in your office.
Thanks, Mark.
Look out at snow-free streets. That's really nice. Thanks, Mayor.
Tonight.